my book Physical 3 continues the story that ended in book 2, or that was present in book 2, of worrying about various components, what things were real and what weren't real, and why the albumin spread out, etc., etc. So Thursday, April 29th is the beginning, and just trying different ways of inserting the sample into the gel. And what one was with the reconstituted cellulose, etc. Nothing very striking. Indeed, the next page says that the results are highly suspicious, though the intensity of pre-albumin 1 suggests an effect of quantity of plasma used. I am worried about whether the pre-albumins are real or not, and attempting to isolate them and purify them, or show that they can be taken out of a gel and run again and shown to be present. On Friday, April 30th, I began to try to get the pre-albumin's cup from a gel. So I have a note that the sample was set up with reconstituted cellulose on Thursday, April 29th, and then on Friday, April 30th, I sliced the gel in to try to get good material out of it. Part of the gel was stained, and a part of it was used for preparing the pre-albumins. I say 1 and 2 were stained. That's slices 1 and 2 from the outside of the gel, and then 2 slices from within the gel, 3 and 4. So I comment that the whole gel was then marked with a multi-blade cutter, and number 3 gel was stained. But I now know where the samples are from, even by looking at the stained part and comparing it with the unstained part. And so cut out section 12 and forwards. The albumin band had a front at 11, and so sections 12 and forward contained the pre-albumins and were taken out and frozen. And then I stained the gel afterwards to see whether the cut was good, and I say that the stained rest of 4, a very good cut, should contain all of the pre-albumins, 1 and 2, without any albumin. And the cut was safe, as at no place does albumin cross the line. So I now have pre-albumins separated from albumin. And the result is then tested a few pages later, 4:20 p.m. I set up the pre-albumins again, dissolved in distilled water, and compared them with alongside plasma, and with no possibility of anything flowing across the gel from the plasma to the place where the pre-albumins were, and the sketch is very faint, but nonetheless it says the results show pre-albumin is real, so I no longer am worried about a pre-albumin being real. Looking at the effect on Saturday, May the 1st, of loading the samples with the pre-washed starch grains versus unwashed, and the differences are very small. Another experiment with pre-albumin. Monday, May the 3rd, with a comment that the great distance of migration of the pre-albumins in a different gel suggests that they are low molecular weight or perhaps strongly acidic. But again, I compared the pre-albumins with plasma and could see certainly the faster of the two clearly, and the second one just about. But again, no question that the pre-albumins are real. Worrying about the plasma containing hemoglobin, and on Friday, May the 7th, I comment that the blood was taken into a cold 40 milliliter siliconized tube, centrifuged 10 minutes at 4000 in the cold, and then 8 milliliters withdrawn, and potassium fluoride and potassium oxalate were added. To give 0.1% of each as is used at the sick kids, meaning that that's what they use in the sick children's hospital in their samples. Here's an example of how the work was going, which is certainly entertaining. That on Monday, May the 10th, 10 milliliters of blood plus half of a mil of 0.1 molar sodium oxalate was centrifuged at 6,000, supernate removed and centrifuged, etc. To prepare the material. But the 10 milliliters of blood was allowed to come with the, I don't understand this one. Backtrack to that one. On Monday, May the 10th, it didn't clot. I know what the point is, but I can't really see it here. Blood was taken into a centrifuge tube, which had been coated on the inside with Vaseline. By taking Vaseline, heating it to a good high temperature, and putting it into a tube, a 50 milliliter tube, letting it all get very hot, and then inverting it so that it drained, left a thin coating of Vaseline on the inside of the tube that was therefore no water, no aquaphilic surface was presented to the blood, and 10 milliliters of blood were taken without adding anything, after 10 minutes 6,000 RPM the supernatant was taken off, and the other 10 milliliter was allowed to clot. So here were two samples, 10 milliliters taken into oxalate and 10 milliliters taken into the tube without oxalate. And a note here that although that was taken at sometime in the morning, not clotted by 6 p.m. So the Vaseline tubes are very effective. And in fact, I found that I had to add a little bit of filter paper to get those samples to clot. They were so resistant to clotting at that point, because there's nothing to stop the clotting system off. But a very good way of preparing plasma so that the clot would retract properly from the vessel wall without tearing the red cell, and you could get hemoglobin free a serum in that way. But you had to seed the clotting system by adding a little bit of filter paper. I used it a great deal afterwards, that method. A sample was dried with purified albumin. I'm looking for where the albumin was taken from. Yes, it was prepared on Monday, May the 10th, at the time which the pre-albumins were taken. A little bit of albumin, part of the gel, was used to prepare albumin, with a note that it will probably contain Alpha 1 2. I don't know why that notice there, but it was a concern. But that sample was then tested on the following day, and compared to albumin, serum plus fluoride and plasma. And the result was that you could see that albumin indeed ran as expected alongside the real alongside the plasma. Test made on Friday, May the 14th, of three gels, pH 7.1, 7.9, and 8.3, in which I can see that the sharpness of the albumin band varies with pH. So at 7.1, it's sharp at the back, and at 8.3, it's sharp at the front, and at 7.9, it was about equal front and back. So the sharpness of the albumin is partly dependent upon the pH, and as we'll later see, it's very understandable, but annoying. Next page is Friday, May 14th. Looking at pH 8.32, 8.68, and 8.98, and that the sharpness of the albumin is sharp at the back at 8.68 and sharp at the front at 8.98. Oddly enough, 8.32 looks to be about equal. Not clear why in that case. An attempt, a similar attempt were made to convince myself, and successfully, that these components are real and not artifact, was to try to purify the faint bands which appeared behind albumin in the gel, which I called alpha subscript 1-1. So I prepared SNF plus albumin, and also tried to get the slower fraction. And there's a result showing that one can purify the components that run behind albumin, so that they are also real. So I was obviously worried about the possibility that the bands that I was seeing were artifacts and not real. But everything said that they were real, although the sharpness of the band in the electrophoresis depended upon the conditions, pH and concentration of the buffers. Is on Thursday, May the 20th, an experiment in which the alpha 1-1 and F were prepared and should be pure, and then were tested again against plasma or serum. So an experiment where only the slower component of the pre-albumins, the slow versus the fast of the pre-albumins, was prepared, and as expected, it lines up, the purified material lines up with that that's present in plasma or serum. Worrying again about hemoglobin, repeat the serum results with increasing amount of hemoglobin, and then with serum versus plasma. And another test says again that the fraction SF from yesterday, which is this is Sunday, May 23rd, SF prepared from yesterday versus a new fraction, very gooey. The start was very gooey. But nonetheless, it confirms that S and F are real by this technique. A note here that it's not obvious what this means, but it's a sketch of a gel and says, poor, not kept. I should have commented at some stage that all of these stained gels were kept in test tubes full of the de-staining buffer with a trace of dye left in them so that they didn't wash out completely and kept sealed. And some of these, I have a couple of these still left from 50 years ago in tubes sealed with a rubber stopper, and they still, the gel is perfectly stable and you can still see all of the bands that are there, and they kept indefinitely if looked after. I kept all of them until I left Toronto, and then I think I threw away a high proportion of them because they really weren't needed. But on June 2nd, I show a method of making of slicing the gel better with a little tray that's diagrammed in the left-hand page. Still wondering about fibrinogen, not really convinced that I can see fibrinogen in the gel. My later knowledge suggests that fibrinogen never entered the gel, that it was too big to enter gels, but some proteins are so big that they don't even enter a gel if it's concentrated. It's not that they migrate very slowly in the gel, they never enter the gel. Evidently, every now and then I would get an experiment that I liked, because setting up some experiment on Wednesday, June 9th, I have a comment that the test was serum at 2 pHs, 8.68 and 8.98, and the next page says both beautifully set up with wet papers, 7.98 is one pH and 8.32 plus or minus 0.02, so good that the Schlierens are visible at 20 minutes and second Schlierens about 0.5 millimeters out, also probably beta. And on the left hand side of the page are two sketches which says, with underlined doubly, very good. They must have been pleased with that day. Next day, not so good. Thursday, the sketch on the left says moderate with one underline instead of very good with two underline. Following page, I'm pleased again, very good, but only one underline, 7.90 and 8.25, the gel. An experiment here where I got a result that I wasn't very happy with on Tuesday, July the 6th, and have something odd about the experiment, though the gel wasn't kept, and there's something variable here, and on the following page I say I suspect the starch percentage most, so I checked a typical transfer on an accurate balance and found that I got 14.7 grams instead of 15 grams. So in future, weigh accurately and pipette 100 millilitres to make sure that the precision was correct. Always worrying about precisions. Some general observation made on Wednesday, July the 14th. General observation, it's now pretty clear that around 4 hours is necessary for full resolution of globulins. And I think later on I settled on running gels for 4 hours. Although that can't be quite right, because I remember somebody commenting that my gels ran 8 hours and they couldn't, so later on I must have changed to 8 hours, because some friends in England said, well, we knew you were a bachelor because you were running your gels for 8 hours, and you can't do an experiment of 8 hours in a normal working day. Because there isn't enough time to make the gel, set it up, run it, and then take the result off. So you must have been working at times that went more than 8 hours, and they deduced I was a bachelor. They were right. And that one that says general observation for around 4 hours, I see in looking more carefully that there was three underneath it. I mean, four was overwritten and rather heavily, and so in fact it ended up by being 8 hours, not four. More and more little details, trying to get things reproducible and understandable. I was never frightened, and I still am never frightened to repeat an experiment many times. I'm never happy with an experiment that hasn't been repeated at least three times. I mean, that's to say, it has been done three times, at least two repeats. Perhaps sometimes, if I get the same result twice, I might accept it. But usually, like more. I added some insulin to a gel, rabbit serum, plus considerable hemoglobin, and I added 0.1% of solid insulin to it and ran it, and found that the insulin in fact ran faster than albumin. Insulin chose, and with an exclamation mark, in the position where the prealbumins were, but the rabbit serum didn't have any prealbumins. So note, no prealbumins. Repeat on humans, just to see whether I could see it on human. Whether I did it again, I don't know. We'll find out. Human serum and serum plus insulin. Yes, here it is. Gel not kept though. Couple more gels here with the comment not kept. Not many of those, but I kept most of them. Trying gels at different temperatures, in the cold and at room temperature, and the differences in migration, distance, but not really in results. Almost indistinguishable is the comment of cold versus room temperature. I'm beginning to worry about something that's making the albumin get sharp and at the front or the back. I'm thinking that it's something to do with the voltage gradient. So I made a little rack with electrodes, copper electrodes, at every three or four millimeters. Every 9 millimeters. So a piece of plastic with every 9 millimeters, a little copper piece of wire that's stuck in. And I use these and made a lot of measurements. I still have one of them left. And all the copper electrodes have obviously also electrolyzed during the experiment because they've become tapered. But I used them to measure voltage gradient along the gel to start to understand what was happening. And in my first experiment was not made with a grid, but just by hand, roughly every nine millimeters, the voltage gradient, and I can see these voltages are measured as 6.2, 6.2, 6.2, and then one is 17.2, and then 7, 8, 8.1, etc., etc. So it's obviously a part of the gel where the voltage gradient is very different, and I imagine it's the front of the albumen there, and we'll see. This would likely be the back of the albumin, and so that the voltage gradient is very high, and so if anything drops behind, it speeds up, so that this is going to explain the shape of the albumin band, but I haven't yet reached that conclusion. Another pH, another voltage per centimetre, quite variable along the gel, 5.6, 7.2, 7.6, etc., etc. At 30 minutes, all of these measurements, where the protein region is, the voltage gradient is, instead of being about 7.0, 6.9, 7.3 volts, it's dropped down to 8.2 and 5.8 in the front, and behind it is 8.0. So I'm beginning to realize that the voltage per centimeter is quite variable along the gel, even at 30 minutes. And at 60 minutes, the variation is can also be seen up and down. Examples of measuring the voltage gradient to understand what was happening. And I have one place where it says where there is protein, and where the voltage gradient is fairly constant, but where the back of the protein is where the voltage gradient is different, the 7.8 at the back. So it's not due to the protein itself, but the voltage gradient near the protein. Wednesday, August 25th, a mammoth experiment here with many, many measurements of voltage gradient along the gel. And on the left-hand side, what the voltage gradient looked like with the two gels, one of which was borate with a thousandth molar sodium chloride, about 0.04 molar borate and thousandth molar sodium chloride, and one with sodium borate, 0.04 molar and 5/10,000 sodium chloride, and measuring the voltage gradient and the sketch of the protein, and it's clear that the gradient is behind the protein in a rather strange pattern, a sigmoidal pattern, above normal behind and below normal ahead of the protein, with a comment, very good. I like that comment every now and then in my book, meaning that I'm happy with the experiment. Another page full of these numbers, Thursday, August 26th, with measuring the voltage gradient along the gel. Pages of this page, Friday, August 27th, a page with must have 100 numbers on it of measuring the voltages. Monday, August 30th, even more numbers. Let's see, there 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, say 20 rows, each with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 9, 10, about 20 rows with 20 entries every row. So that's 400 numbers on this page, of all written in by hand of what the voltage gradient was along there. Several pages of this sort here and there. Another massive one, September the 1st, that is even more measurements on it. And because the time now is being measured at 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 15, 20, 25, 30, 40, 50, 60, 60 minutes, and measuring the voltage gradient every minute or two. And that must have been working like hell. Still haven't realized properly what is happening. Until Tuesday, September 7th, when I begin to realize that it's the voltage gradient is what's causing the sharpness, not the voltage itself, so that these little measurements, these short distances, are really a measure of the derivative of voltage with respect to distance. You might say dV by, or delta V by delta X. The voltage gradient, and the sigmoidal curve of down and then up, when integrated, gives a more or less Gaussian distribution, so that at the back of the gel, at the back of the albumin, the voltage gradient is low, and at the front the voltage gradient is high, and but the voltage itself is going following the protein. Words to that effect, I'm not sure it's quite right, but that's what I was thinking. But I also was worried about the interaction of the protein, etc., with the copper electrode, and have a comment, must try with an electronic voltmeter to avoid polarization, because my voltmeter would cause some polarization. But I wasn't frightened of making measurements. So when this book ends, to do some experiments, thinking about doing some experiments with heparin, though I don't see that I have any there specifically, but use this technique for repeating heparin experiments with new heparin. So I must have used some heparin earlier that I didn't notice. But the end is, that's the last page in this notebook, which ends on September 10th, Friday, September 10th. 19-something. no year on this. I remember that problem, actually, in trying to sort out these gels, but I found that the notebook nowhere had the year in it. 54. What is it?
54.
But it's been entered afterwards in red crayon. There's a 1954 book 3 there. So we finished book 3.